Welcome to this week's edition of the talking newspaper for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill Redway and this is the Red Saturn programme for the week ending Saturday the 14th of December 2019. The music I'm playing this week is a live recording I made recently of a song by Rachmaninoff called We Sing to You. It's performed by the Resurrection Vocal Ensemble from St. Petersburg, Russia, who gave a wonderful concert recently in the Palladian Church in Eyot St. Lawrence, which I was fortunate enough to hear and record, and they were kind enough to agree to allowing you to hear it on the Talking Newspaper. So, many thanks to the Resurrection Vocal Ensemble for this beautiful music, and of course I'll play it in full at the end of the programme. This week, of course, we have the latest news stories from the current pre-election edition of the Hearts Advertiser, followed by suggested listings of programmes on national radio that might be of interest to you over the next 7 days. Courtesy of Sue, once again. Part two is our Poets Corner, in which two of the Ver poets, Anna Avebury and Sylvia Banham, read some of their work. And in part three, Nick Churton, a member of the Beausand Ver Writers Group, reads his short story, An Unwanted Appearance. We start with the news, and our readers today are Gilly, Caroline, Martin and Rich.
Hello, my name's Gilly, and I'm going to start by reading an article about the big sleep out. Over 100 volunteers sleep out in the cold to help homeless. The annual St Albans Sleep Out was held at Oaklands College for the third year running and raised thousands for homeless people across Hearts. Volunteers braved the elements and built makeshift shelters out of recycled cardboard to sleep in overnight on Friday. Starting at 9 p.m. and finishing at 7 a.m. the following morning. The event was sponsored by Hearts Young Homeless, HYH, and organised with the help of local homelessness charities The Living Room, Centre 33, Emmaus and Open Door. On the night, there was a talk from a guest speaker who had experienced homelessness, a silent disco and performances from the college's music students. Among the rough sleepers on the night was High Sheriff of Hertfordshire, Sarah Beasley. She said, "The Sleep Out has been an annual event in St Albans for a few years now, and Oaklands College were wonderful and supportive hosts again this year. There was good spirit and creative cardboard construction, and fortunately for us, no rain. The charities could not do their vital work without the support of those who fundraise on their behalf, and those who joined the Sleep Out not only did that, but went one step further to raise awareness, experiencing for themselves what it is like to have to sleep outside, with no home to go to. With the number of homeless people in Hertfordshire on the increase, I applaud them for their efforts in highlighting this sad and difficult issue and helping those who work to end homelessness." Mayor of St Albans, Councillor Janet Smith, also took part in the Sleep Out to raise money for Open Door, and there was an arts workshop arranged by St Albans Arts to keep the sleepers entertained. HYH Fundraising and Communications Manager Caroline Neal said, "We would like to say a huge thanks to all the 120 amazing sleepers who took part in the St Albans Sleep Out, kindly hosted at Oaklands College. We were so lucky to have dry weather, fantastic community spirit and great supporters. Thank you to everyone who donated or volunteered to help us. The fundraising total is currently at around 30,000 and will go towards the five charities which organised the event." And there's also a picture, people sleeping out.
Hello, my name is Martin. And I've got a feature here about Rennie Grove, the hospice, which is so, so well known in St Albans. I think, I venture to suggest, if you think charity in St Albans, you'll probably think of, yes, Rennie Grove. And the subtitle is Festive Shopping, All Wrapped Up with Rennie Grove. Rennie Grove is a local charity providing specialist care and support for adults and children with a life-limiting illness. Its unique hospice at home service, available day and night, supports patients to live the best quality life they can with a choice about how and where they are cared for towards the end of their life. You can support Rennie Grove and cross items off your Christmas shopping list by visiting one of its local shops. It has two in St Albans, two in Harpenden, and one in London Colney. There you will find a huge range of top-quality, pre-loved and new goods. New in store for 2019 is a range of what they call caring gifts. And there is something to suit all budgets. Caring gifts include an hour of care from one of Rennie Grove's specially trained healthcare assistants, diagnostic and monitoring equipments, bereavement therapy for a child and more. These gifts are also available from Rennie Grove's website. While visiting the website, why not also take a look at Rennie Grove's eBay shop? There is an ever-changing plethora of fascinating and unusual objects that you can bid on. Visit renniegrove.org/shops and follow the link to bid on auction items that are listed right now. Director of Retail and Trading, Deborah Gould, said, "We are so proud of our chain of 28 shops. They are Aladdin's caves full of items including clothing, footwear and accessories alongside practical and decorative household items as well as toys and games and books. Our shop teams, including our brilliant volunteers, are creating a different festive window every week in the run-up to Christmas. Each shop will also be offering the opportunity to win a gift hamper every Saturday in the 4 weeks before Christmas, as well as holding a children's Christmas card competition from December the 1st to the 14th. By purchasing gifts or treating yourself, you are contributing a great local cause and helping to give local patients the choice to spend their last weeks and months at home with their families, which is especially important at this time of year."
Hello, I'm Caroline. I have an article about the climate crisis at the heart of a packed environmental hustings event. The increased concern local people have about the climate crisis and environmental issues saw more than 150 people filling out the seats in Trinity URC Church, with latecomers resorting to standing at the back. All five parliamentary candidates agreed to take part, but Anne Main was sick, so her place was taken at short notice by Councillor Julian Day, the ex-leader of the St Albans City and District Council. All the candidates spoke about how seriously their parties took environmental issues and outlined the different approaches they and their parties would take. Questions submitted by the public range from global issues of the climate crisis and fossil fuel extraction to local issues of the River Ver and Luton Airport, via food security, tree planting, citizens' assemblies, retrofitting homes, and the youth climate strikes. One of the organisers, St Albans Friends of the Earth coordinator, Amanda Yearworth, said, "We're delighted with the turnout at the environmental hustings. It demonstrates how far the environment has moved up to the political agenda. I hope whoever is elected takes the opportunity to act on the promises they made this evening." The loudest applause of the night came for two teenagers representing Extinction Rebellion, who presented the candidates with saplings, asked them to protect the saplings as they would protect the earth, and asking all the candidates to reflect deeply on the environment when making decisions. The hustings was run by volunteers from St Albans Friends of the Earth, Sustainable St Albans and Extinction Rebellion St Albans.
Hello, I'm Richard. My article is entitled Feeling Sad? Some Ways to Tackle the Disorder. As part of the It's OK to Say mental health awareness campaign, founder Stacey Turner looks at seasonal affective disorder, SAD for short, a form of depression linked to the wintry months. SAD effectively limits a person's life within a seasonal pattern. While it is also known as winter depression, a few people also experience it in the summer. Some people are more prone to SAD as it can run in families. However, it can hit anyone at any time, sometimes triggered by something else, and can reappear at times of change, stress, and overwhelming situations. While the exact cause is unknown, it is linked to reduced exposure to sunlight during the wintry months. The trigger from other things can stem from someone shutting themselves away, reducing their exposure, and therefore sometimes misdiagnosed. The underpinning factor here is that it is a form of depression, and therefore may be treated in a similar way. However, it is helpful to pinpoint SAD or to have a consideration that it may be the condition, as treatment like light therapy can be introduced. Many people respond to treatments that correlate with the five senses, as they play a role in adjusting mood, calming, and causing a response unique to each person. Poor smelling ability can be a symptom of aging or a medical condition and draw attention to a potential diagnosis of schizophrenia and depression. Taste is divided into four different tastes, being salty, sweet, sour, and bitter, with a fifth taste, savoury. A fascinating fact is that spicy is actually a pain signal. In addition to the main five senses, we also have a sixth sense, and this is proprioception, which allows coordinated movement of the limbs and muscles. It is the reason you can touch your finger to the tip of your toes and move without looking. Every sense plays a vital role in our everyday life, as each sense communicates with the brain, allowing us to respond and make decisions. You can look at the five senses as a puppet adjusting our strings, with many lifestyle factors causing havoc. Environmental influences alter the ability to respond, so in return you get a stress response. With SAD and other similar conditions, it is important to introduce things to appeal to these senses to stimulate them, altering our mood and perceptions, giving us a boost. Think of it like a battery charger. The stimulants are the charger. Senses are also responsible for memories. In most situations, you experience quite a few at the same time, as each one interconnects, allowing you the opportunity to understand how you're feeling. Being mindful of what we can put in place to help us cope are all valuable things for consideration. They make a huge difference to how we feel and present ourselves in the world, adjusting to things and responding going about our daily lives. Finally, please always consult with your GP or speak with a professional. There are many helpful suggestions, and SAD is a recognised condition that with help, you can manage.
A charity is helping young people with heart problems by using funds raised in memory of a St Albans squash player. Heart charity Cardiac Risk in the Young, I'll call it CRY from now on in this article, has added a new echocardiogram to its screening equipment thanks to funds raised in memory of Harry Faulkner. Harry tragically collapsed and died over 6 years ago, aged 18, from a previously undiagnosed heart condition whilst he was playing squash in a league match. Since Harry's death, friends and family have campaigned tirelessly to raise awareness and funds in his memory, totalling over £182,000 to date. This led to the screening of more than 1,200 young people, where 35 individuals were identified as needing further heart investigations. Every week, 12 apparently fit and healthy young people in the UK die suddenly from an undiagnosed heart defect. In 80% of these cases, there will have been no signs or symptoms until it is too late, which is why the charity believes screening is so vitally important. CRY now tests around 30,000 young people each year, aged between 14 and 35, and well over 200,000 since the screening programme was launched in 1995. Harry's mum, Donna, said, "I'm like a dog with a bone, and I won't give up in getting the message out there about screening. So many young people just think they're invincible and that it won't happen to them. But my Harry was so fit. He played squash, a very powerful game, and had no symptoms at all. We had no idea, and that is what's so scary." She added, "Just go onto the website and register now. It's free. The government doesn't pay for it, but it's funded by families like us, supported by our friends. If our screenings can save just one life, well, it won't bring back Harry, but it will help us as a family. And when we see CRY's mobile screening unit testing young people in Harry's memory, it makes us so proud." And there's a picture of Harry's mum, Donna Faulkner, with the doctor and CRY ambassador.
A health and well-being centre offering community health services for children, young people and adults has opened in St Albans. The new facility is based inside St Albans Civic Centre and was opened by Mayor Councillor Janet Smith last week. Services on offer include baby and toddler health clinics, health visiting, children's speech and language therapy, a children's audiology specialist service, specialist podiatry and eye screening services for people with diabetes. Claire Hawkins, the chief executive of Hertfordshire Community NHS Trust, said, "Thanks to a very successful and valued partnership with St Albans City and District Council, we have been able to replace an older, out-of-date clinic building with a new state-of-the-art healthcare facility. I'm particularly excited that the new facility is inside the Civic Centre, right alongside a wide range of valuable local services. This will really help us to work more closely with these services for the benefit of local people. I want to say thank you to our patients and service users for bearing with us over the last few months while we have had to provide services in other locations. Thank you to our council and local partner colleagues for their support and understanding while we carried out the necessary conversion work. Facilities at the centre include special soundproof rooms for audiology appointments and clinic rooms which can be used for a range of purposes, from one-to-one appointments to group sessions." St Albans District Council Chief Executive Amanda Foley said, "We are very pleased to welcome local NHS services to join the council and other partners at the Civic Centre. It is great to see the plans and partnership working together and lots more services made available in the city centre. It's another important addition to the local services hub, which is developing here."
A St Albans leisure centre has won a prestigious national award. Westminster Lodge has won Local Authority Gym of the Year Award at the National Fitness Awards 2019. This award recognises facilities that excel in providing services to the community with a range offering for all types of member. The winners were announced at a glittering National Fitness Awards event in Leicester on Friday, November the 29th. Everyone Active General Manager Leslie Garner said, "I could not be prouder of my team who work so hard every day to deliver the best service they can to our members and visitors." The National Fitness Awards are held in very high regard, and we know this category in particular is hotly contested and widely competitive. The judges' visit in October gave us the chance to demonstrate the full breadth and depth of our facilities.
Actor Steve Coogan joined the Liberal Democrat candidate Daisy Cooper to canvass in St Albans on Monday night. The Alan Partridge star, who describes himself as a traditional Labour voter, took to the streets and knocked on doors with Daisy to encourage people to vote tactically in the general election. He took part in an exclusive interview with the Hearts Advertiser and later told an audience at Marlborough Road Methodist Church why he was backing the Lib Dems to win locally. "I've been helping Labour candidates in marginals where they've got the best shot at turning out the Tories. And I've been helping Liberal Democrats in a situation similar to Daisy's. I'm very much a pragmatist right now. I'm hoping that people around the country will take a pragmatic view, because it's very frustrating if you feel you are principled, but all you do is have your principles in isolation and you're never able to see them implemented. So we need pragmatic thinking. That's why I'm here today to support Daisy."
This is a music article, and it's about a group called Common People, who are continuing to raise money for charity after another successful music night. Common People held an indie night at the Pioneer Club on October the 19th and raised over £700 for Earthworks St Albans. DJs on the night were Ed the Saint, Colin Toms and Sarah Clark. John Prayer of Common People said, "We chose Earthworks as they are a small and important local charity who always need extra funding, and the money raised will make an immediate impact." The Indie Nights started in February with a fundraiser, after which we realised there was a demand for them, so we decided to continue doing them, raising funds for local charities along the way. Common People's next Indie Night is on February the 29th, which will raise money for another local charity, Keach Hospice Care.
And from one charity story to another, I have one featuring Christmas trees. Harpenden and St Albans residents are asked to donate to charity in return for having their tree collected by volunteers. The collection service is run by the Hospice of St Francis in Berkhamsted, which supports around 150 patients and their families from St Albans District each year. Teams of volunteers, supported by waste contractors Viola and St Albans and Harpenden Lions clubs, will be out on Saturday, January the 11th and Sunday, January the 12th to collect trees from AL1 through to AL5 postcodes. Residents can leave the trees outside their home and they will be chipped, recycled and turned into bio-fertiliser for local farms. Lucy Hume, Joint Director of Fundraising at the Hospice, said, "Every donation made for the collection of your tree is helping more people and their families to live their precious lives well in 2020. Now, there's a website here for you concerning collection of your tree, if you're so minded. To arrange collection, please go to Charity Xmas Tree, collection.com.
A St Albans tailor who has worked in the city for 56 years received the Royal Victorian Order for his services to the royal family. Geoffrey Golding, who owns G.D. Golding Tailors in Hatfield Road, was awarded the honour by Prince William at Buckingham Palace on Tuesday, November the 26th. Mr Golding, who was accompanied to the palace by his wife Teresa and two sons Kelvin and Mark, said, "I feel very honoured. To have both the royal warrant and now the Royal Victorian Order was the icing on the cake. Since starting his business in 1963 at the age of 19, he has tailored six leading members of the royal family over three decades. He still works 60-hour weeks, employing 15 people in front of house and office roles, and goes to Buckingham Palace about once a month. The Royal Victorian Order is given by the Queen to people who have served her or the monarch personally."
My next article is entitled Blood Cancer Award and is over a photograph under which is written, Meena Kumari Sharma from St Albans at the Anthony Nolan Supporter Awards with Anthony Nolan Chief Executive Henny Braund and comedian Nish Kumar. A St Albans mum with leukaemia has been recognised by a blood cancer charity, Anthony Nolan, for her work raising awareness of stem cell donation among people from Asian backgrounds. Meena Kumari Sharma, who is 42 and the mother of twins, was diagnosed with the blood cancer in 2018 and told that she would need a stem cell transplant to survive. After struggling to find a donor, Meena and her family set up Match for Meena, which has encouraged more than 5,000 people to join the International Stem Cell Register. Meena, whose leukemia is now stable and not as aggressive, received a highly commended honour at an award ceremony in the Tower of London last week. She said, "It has been an absolute honour to be at the Anthony Nolan Support Awards, and we just need to keep sending out the message that we need more potential lifesavers to sign up to the Stem Cell Register."
Alongside a steaming glass of mulled wine in the boot, a turkey dinner at the Fighting Cocks, and carols on the hour in the Abbey, Christmas in St Albans really isn't complete without a visit to the arena's annual panto. For the past 9 years, the man at the heart of the celebrated festive show has been our very own Bob Golding. And this year, he takes the director's reins, as well as donning a series of outrageous frocks as Nurse Nelly, with more costume changes than your average superhero movie. Fortunately, Sunday's show once again proved a riotous fusion of slapstick, special effects and showbiz, with only the odd hiccup getting in the way of what otherwise would have been a faultless performance from all concerned. For the children, highlights were unquestionably the chase through the audience by cast members armed with water pistols, and the hilarious water-laden bathroom routine performed by Bob and long-term partner Ian Kirby, while the adults were kept laughing by increasingly complicated pop culture gags and the usual digs at Luton, Dunstable, Watford and the Stevenage panto, all well-established traditions from previous shows. As the leading lady is required to spend most of the second half in a 100-year coma, Gemma Carlisle swiftly made up for her absence by returning in style for a triumphant battle against the spectacular animatronic dragon, giving a welcome feminist twist to proceedings. She rarely receives recognition for her good girl roles each year. However, her consummate professionalism, personal charm, and fantastic voice really do deserve credit for the overall success of every arena panto she appears in. Big name draw Andy Day, best known for fronting assorted adventure shows on CBeebies, was perfectly serviceable as Jangles the Jester, putting his playful screen persona to good use even when he did stumble over the odd line. But did we really need an excuse for him to flog his new single? Arguably not. This year's standout performances definitely came from ex-EastEnder Rita Simmons as the evil fairy Carabosse and West End star Lisa Davina Philip as her sparkly counterpart. Rita's turn as the show's proverbial baddie was suitably malevolent but also packed with punch and panache, stealing her scenes with some smooth ad-libs and a turn which owed much to Michelle Gomez's psychopathic Missy on TV's Doctor Who. Meanwhile, Lisa brought a warmth and joy to her performance which was both honest and engaging, and she would be a welcome return to the arena in future years. Credit also must go to the marvellous live band, whose musical flair adds so much to the overall experience. If anything, Evolution Productions' St Albans pantomimes have almost become victims of their own staggering success, with expectations raised higher each year, and as usual, everything you wanted from a pantomime was there in spades, so while this might not have been the absolute best show of recent years, it still knocks spots off any other panto you're likely to see this Christmas.
Maintaining the musical theme, this final feature for me is New Carols premiered at Society's concert. Two Carols will be premiered at the Society's 75th anniversary Christmas concert at 7:30 p.m. this Saturday, December the 14th, in Marlborough Road Methodist Church, St Albans. This, I should have said, features the St Albans Choral Society. This is their Christmas concert. The Society is excited to be giving the first performance of the beautiful Lo, He Slumbers in His Manger by Cecilia McDowell, who is the choir's composer in association, and a gorgeous setting of There Is No Rose, also specially written for the choir, by James Francis Brown, who is co-director of the Hertfordshire Festival of Music. Along with favourites such as O Come All Ye Faithful and Jingle Bells, the choir will also perform Come Let Us Gather by Christopher Gunning, who is the composer of the Poirot TV series theme tune, and O Radiant Dawn by Scottish composer James Macmillan. The organist is Richard James Harvey, and George Vass conducts the concert, which also features readings by members of the choir. There will be festive refreshments and a collection in aid of Centre 33, which is the St Albans charity for people who are homeless and disadvantaged. You can also enjoy an evening of festive music and singing in the beautiful surroundings of Sandridge's Village Church this weekend. Village Voices, the community choir of Sandridge, will be holding its annual Christmas concert on Saturday, December the 14th, at St Leonard's Church at 7 for 7:30 p.m. start. Entrance is £5 on the door, and all the proceedings go to the upkeep of the church.
Enjoy some whiz-popping family fun with Roald Dahl this Christmas. The stage is set, the countdown has started. Stand by, everyone, because Roald Dahl's splendiferous, swig-figgling story, George's Marvellous Medicine, is arriving any minute on the Abbey Theatre stage. The Company of Ten's gloriumptious Christmas show is a feast of eye-popping feats, outrageously funny situations, and hilarious characters as only the master storyteller himself could come up with. Ben Tiplady plays George in this fast-moving spectacular. He said, Roald Dahl never does normal, thank goodness, and his stories are always bursting with his trademark crazy sense of humour, which kids really relate to. It's definitely a high-energy show that is keeping all us actors well and truly on our toes. I think it's safe to say that you'll see things in this production you may never have seen on stage before. Performances take place from Saturday, December the 14th to Sunday, December the 29th. To book tickets, go to abbeytheatre.org.uk or call the box office on 01 727 857 861.
And to finish with a final Christmas call, celebrate with Christmas with the Harpenden Choral Society at the Choir's Festive Concert. The Society will be performing its annual Christmas Carol concert on Tuesday, December the 17th, in the High Street Methodist Church, Harpenden. Conducted by John Andrews and accompanied on the organ by Douglas Tang, the concert will feature many traditional favourites for both choir and audience. It will also include specially chosen readings and solo spots from members of the choir. A spokesman for Harpenden Choral Society said, please join us in celebrating Christmas in the heart of our lovely town. We shall be serving seasonal refreshments in the hall immediately after the concert, included in the ticket price. This year's appeal and retiring collection will be in aid of Jumbulance, a Harpenden-based charity started in 2001, which takes disabled and seriously ill people of any age on holidays and day trips that would otherwise be off-limits for them. The charity has taken over 500 people on trips to Holland, adapted skiing for young people in Austria, to Germany, Disneyland, as well as over 1,000 local people from care homes and hospices on day trips and short breaks. The church doors will open at 7 p.m. for a 7:30 start. Tickets for the concert cost £10 for adults and £3 for children and students, including programme and seasonal refreshments.
Radio listings from Saturday the 14th of December to Friday the 20th of December. For Saturday the 14th of December, the Radio 4 drama at 2:45 p.m. is Three Sisters Rewired, a two-part radical reworking of Anton Chekhov's 1901 classic play, but set in modern-day Yorkshire. Andrew Collins visits the music from heartwarming Christmas films in Saturday Night at the Movies at 5 p.m. on Classic FM. In Loose Ends at 6:15 p.m. on Radio 4, Clive Anderson and Sarah Cox are joined by actors Mackenzie Crook, Patterson Joseph and Ruth Madeley with music by Simply Red. Opera on 3 from the Met at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 3 is Tchaikovsky's 1890 work The Queen of Spades, sung in Russian and recorded that day from the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Set in 18th century St. Petersburg, an impoverished army officer determines to find the secret of the cards and thus both ensure a wealthy future and secure his illicit lover Lisa's hand in marriage. At 7 p.m. in Profile on Radio 4, friends, adversaries, colleagues and confidants provide insights into a figure in the news. Archive on 4, The Problem of Leisure, is at 8 p.m. on Radio 4. With predictions from 100 years ago suggesting that advances in technology would reduce the need to work and give us more leisure time, Phil Tinline investigates the BBC archives to lay bare historic fears of having nothing to do. The new music show on Radio 3 at 10 p.m. has highlights from last month's Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival, including world premieres by two British composers.
So let's fast forward from Saturday to Sunday, the 15th of December. The European Broadcasting Union broadcasts its annual Christmas Music Day from around Europe all through the day on Radio 3, beginning at 9 o'clock in the morning. Lauren Reverne's guest on Desert Island Discs at 11:15 a.m. on Radio 4 is playwright Heidi Thomas. The Radio 4 drama at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is This Is Your Country Now Too. Jonathan Myerson's tale is the last of seven plays about the experience of child refugees fleeing persecution to find a new life in the UK since 1939. The family of 14-year-old Tarek is bidding him farewell in a restaurant in Idlib, which is situated in northwestern Syria. In Open Book on Radio 4 at 4 p.m, Benjamin Markovitz talks to Mariella Frostrup about his novel Christmas in Austin, and John Mullen considers the best family arguments in fiction. Following at 4:30 in the afternoon on Radio 4 is Art of Now, The Tides of Staithe, the now unused harbour of the village of Burnham Overy Staithe, which is in Norfolk, is in constant flux, transforming itself somewhat mystically every day. Local poet Kevin Crossley Holland reflects on the magic and the menace of the tides.
A look now at programmes that run on each day through the week from Monday. The Book of the Week on Radio 4 FM at 9:45 a.m. is Letters from Tove. Sarah Lambie reads from the intimate letters of Moomin's creator, Tove Jansson, spanning 50 years, and capturing Jansson's life within Helsinki's bohemian circles and at her island home. At 10:45 a.m. and repeated at 7:45 p.m. on Radio 4, the 15-minute drama is Subterranean Homesick Blues. Bill Nighy and Anna Calder Marshall return for a fourth series of A.L. Kennedy's romantic comedy about love in later life. The composer of the week is Johannes Brahms, and Donald MacLean explores the friends, mentors, lovers and music of Brahms to find out what made him tick at midday on Radio 3. On Radio 4, the 2:15 drama begins this week with two episodes of Fake Heiress by Chloe Moss, a documentary drama profiling the con artist, Russian-born Anna Sarikin, who reinvented herself as a multimillionaire socialite. This is Radio Times Pick of the Week. On Wednesday, Their Humble Servants is a new drama by Jonathan Myerson, exploring the workings of Buckingham Palace and the staff who have to deal with them. On Radio 4 Extra at 6 p.m. in Short Works, Greta Saatchi reads five short tales by US author Patricia Highsmith, who is most renowned for her novels such as Strangers on a Train.
And finally, some picks for each day from Monday to Friday. For Monday the 16th of December, Kirsty Walk discusses scientific secrets, lies and hype with guests in Start the Week on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. Also on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. is Like, Share, Vote. With a new government, this programme has been studying a group of people whose fluctuating political views may have influenced the result and examines the part played by social media in their decision. For Tuesday 17th December, on Radio 4 at 11 a.m, writer and broadcaster Timandra Harkness and London cabbie Robert Lawden team up to ask, what has sat-nav done to our brains? Are sat-navs changing the way we think? This is followed by another title question at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4. What if we stopped buying stuff and started making it? Tim Hayward talks to craftspeople about their efforts to raise understanding of how things are made. On Radio 2, Joe Wiley presents a Christmas bonanza with guests from her home in Northamptonshire in Joe Wiley's Rock Stars Around the Christmas Tree at 7 p.m. For Radio 3 in concert at 7:30 p.m, Georgia Mann presents the first concert in Stephen Hough's residency at Wigmore Hall. The pianist-composer is joined by longtime friend and collaborator, the cellist Stephen Isselis. For Wednesday, December the 18th, BBC media editor Amal Rajan presents the last in the series of The Media Show on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. with guest Ian Hislop, who contributes his thoughts on the media year. And finally, Radio 3 in concert at 7:30 p.m. is the first Bridgewater Hall concert for the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra under its new chief conductor, Omar Maya Welber, who made an impressive debut at the Proms this summer.
For Thursday, 19th of December, In Our Time at 9 a.m. on Radio 4, Melvin Bragg and guests look at the life of W.H. Auden, the great 20th century poet. Austerley House in West London is the subject of Free Thinking on Radio 3 at 10 p.m. In The Strange Case of the Huge Country Pile, Matthew Sweet investigates our fascination with the grand country estate and delves into the unpleasant truths of power and exploitation with which they are sometimes associated. For Friday, 20th of December, at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4, Ostentatious is an improvised comedy drama in the style of Jane Austen, thus the title, Ostentatious, based on a title suggested by the studio audience. At 3:45 on Radio 4, Short Works presents Photos from Krakow, read by Monica Dolan. The author, Elizabeth J. Kuti, is head of the Department of Literature, Film and Theatre Studies at the University of Essex. At 5 p.m. on Radio 3, Katie Derham and Sean Rafferty present a live Christmas edition of In Tune from Handel's Parish Church, St. George's, Hanover Square. At 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4, with the nation still coming to grips with the election results, the cast of Dead Ringers brings listeners analysis, political comment, and a joke about Christmas. For Radio 3 in concert, at 7:30 p.m, singer and broadcaster Claire Teal, the BBC Singers and the National Youth Jazz Orchestra join forces in a celebration of the golden age of festive jazz in a concert curated by composer Alexander Lestrange. It's time now for our Poets Corner, and we have two of the well-known Ver poets reading some of their work. First, Anna Avebury reads The Foxglove.
The Foxglove by Anna Avebury. Despite my name, I mean well. Show my hand for all to see, a carolan of silk, softer than the finest pelt. However, beware the tolling of dead men's bells of pungent purple, heavy with seed. Only fools would dare a lion's mouth. For all the tales of fairy folk, my thimbles bear a bitter tang. For my name's sake, I work by stealth on the tightrope between sickness and health. Cushions for John Clare. A tapestry of flowers, tracts of daisies and blue-eyed forget-me-nots, some in posies, others in boxes. Brushed by the breeze, lavender and stocks hum with bees. There's Queen Anne's lace for purity of soul, signs of the year's turning in dark-eyed sloes, to lay them down at his head, at his feet, brightening his day, making his dreams sweet. Snowdrops. Suddenly, each year, green shoots brave bleak February days. Snow and hail and biting winds test their resolve. They stand firm, biding their time. The next time you look, they're bonneted in white, a cluster of nodding heads, a congregation of light, celebrating life. Thirsting for rain. Cool woodland streams lose their sparkle, run dry. Roots shrivel. Leaves curl in on themselves, thirsting for rain. In cities, fans whir. Commuters moan and mop their brows as they scroll screens and read the skies for signs of rain. Spires of lupins flare blue flames and roses glow like coals. Grass refuses to grow, sickens, yellowing for lack of rain. The vixen stalks shadows, nosing roads and drains. The hare chases dreams through meadows in search of rain. When will the willow stir again to the splash of water birds in the lake and the kingfisher preen relishing the rain? When glens and fells echo once more to running streams and swans dip their beaks into clouds, we will be blessed with rain. Window World. Here at the window, hands in suds among islands of plates and mugs, cutlery like shipwrecked treasure at the bottom of the sink. I see my mother's hands through my own, moving round the plates, rinsing them as she did our faces, swishing the flannel from forehead to chin and back again. Outside, shadows of a table and shrubs appear. Denizens of the window world I enter standing here. Voices chink over my shoulder, cup against saucer, as in the dining room with its slim 70s sideboard, housing my father's socks on one side, his rum in the other. A telephone, blue squat toad, perched on a pink doily in the corner. The garden lies silent and dark. Somewhere a cat yowls, a car speeds off into the distance. Now a fridge and door appear in the window, no more substantial than their distant cousins, the fleeting visitors who ghost this kitchen, like one of the neighbours just dropping by.
And now, Joseph, by Sylvia Banham.
The shore is a dark strip of foreground on which the water dances and turns away, dances and turns away in a white glimmer of spray. Beyond, where pale creases of water meet the paler sky, echoing blue on blue, your little figure, net in hand, intently leans into the endless sea, into the far-out horizon. Your shadow, only a dark scribble on the water. What is it that enthralls you? Alone, alert, only a knee height from land, waiting for something to surface, waiting, net in hand, still between deep sea and sand. Verulamium Park, St. Albans. This poem arose from walking on a sunny day in Verulamium Park, and it seemed to provide an image of peaceful coexistence on a day in which the world news was of religious and racial tensions, forcing many people to flee their lives. Alban, who had a way with water, might feel at ease here by the lake. Here, birds of differing feathers are subject only to fickle weathers. No need to hide their plumage, like the priest Amphibolus, who, disguised in the saint's borrowed cloak, must flee the Romans, eager for his blood. Herons trail skinny legs, wings beating slow. Bustle of coots, moorhens, mallards, geese with flotillas of goslings in tow, and gawky half-grown birds whose elders beleaguer passers-by for bread. Swans aloof paddle the backwater. A gaggle of chattering term-time Vikings in cardboard helmets vie for notice with the tinfoil shiny ducks. Cacophony of birds, feathers sleek as oil slicks in the mirrored light, dipping, skidding, wheeling in sudden flight in watery territory shared, oblivious of tribe, where once Boudicca and her Iceni routed Romans. Today no hint of quarrels with alien gods and factions. An old man dozes on a bench, lovers dawdle hand in hand. The water bears no trace of bloodshed, battles, bigotry. In the museum at the park's edge, mosaics and pottery lie with weapons, coins, insignia side by side. Nearby, on its chalky bed, the river slips beyond the park, idles beneath the bridge where Alban, outcast from Verulamium, stemmed a flood, or where his lopped-off head, so legend says, rolled downhill and a spring welled up. Death Instinct. Red kites glide over furrows in effortless parabolas. Earth hard, hedges bare, no place for mouse or worm to hide. It is the bird's streamlined flight keeps the trees intent on the pale sky, indifferent to the intended victim's plight. A survivor's mirroring instinct for keeping fatality at bay. Motion disguising the skeleton beneath the wing. Stasis, the cold bones of the branches mimicking death's rigidity. And my admiration complicit. Tuscan Church. Jesus hangs in the gloom, legs bent, body curved like a skier, under his patina of centuries-old paint. Simplicity and silence. Only our hushed voices, breathing the hallowed names, Lorenzetti, Giotto. Eyes lingering on faded frescoes like fingers telling rosary beads. From the shadow, dark as his suit, a kneeling shape emerges. Head bent, eyes closed, hands clasped, bulky flesh and blood, a fervent man of sorrows, oblivious of images. The heavy door swings open, letting sunlight in upon the wounded god in golds and reds, and on his sombre, suffering counterpart. We slip outside, our secular devotions done, leaving behind us in the dark the glowing crucifix, the kneeling man. Housewife. Jack by the hedge illuminates the patch of tangled undergrowth and weeds where amorous ivy tendrils latch themselves to bark, and bindweed feeds on the dark beads of black currants which soften in the ripening sun. Here, wide-eyed clematis decants soft light onto the shadowed earth, dun where desiccated moss still clings. In this half-hidden, untamed area, where butterflies spread patterned wings amongst the unruly buddleia, which drapes the compost heap in blue, she hangs the washing out to dry, keeping a love tryst, giving no clue of her affair with lavish earth and sky. The dead. The dead leave traces of themselves, empty houses, tombstones, derelict castles. I hear their voices echo in old songs. I visit them in galleries and books, or notice them with interest framed on friends' walls and mantelpieces. Yet there are some who come unbidden, unannounced, though not unwelcome. They enter me. They do not feel like ghosts. I do not think they mean to make me sad. In a new light. To rise at this early hour seems not the restlessness of an insomniac, but the key to a door closed to those still sleeping. Sun patterns the ceiling. Objects own their separate shapes. And unexpectedly, the mind's freight shifts in this new light, sheds its weight.
We now come to part three, in which local writer Nick Churton, a member of the Beau Sanvers Writers Group, reads his short story, An Unwanted Appearance.
My unwanted appearance on the live TV Strictly Come Dancing Christmas special came to an abrupt end during the very first energetic burst of our Paso Doble. It had all been going so well. My partner, Chartreuse, was in one of her better moods. Usually she wasn't. She was a glass half-empty sort of girl, and for most of the time I was the glass. But her criticisms weren't only reserved for me. They often extended to the traffic, her dressmaker, hairdresser, the band, the lighting, the floor, our choreographer, and, all too regularly, the judges. But her only gripe on this glittering occasion had been the visible line of my underpants beneath the tight spandex of my costume trousers. Personally, I thought that the judges had been kind to us over the last few competition rounds. I had not expected to do so well, but for whatever reason, we found ourselves at the Blackpool Tower Ballroom on the night of all nights. The audience was huge, and even Chartreuse couldn't criticise the band or its leader. The floor was beautifully sprung, and overhead the giant glitter ball shone and sparkled. We had made it. All those hours of putting up with cold practice halls, miles on the road between home and competition venues, snatched fast food meals, sore feet, and unrestrained tantrums from my partner had led us to this pinnacle. Taking her hand, I led Chartreuse, who for once wore a beaming smile, onto the celebrated ballroom floor. For a moment, the spotlight concentrated on her before widening to capture us both. Grinning, we held our opening posture and then began our energetic routine precisely in time for the opening note. Sadly, it was on this precise note that things began to unravel. The unravelling started from the waist at the back of my trousers. At first, I barely noticed. My mind was on the dance and everything felt comfortably held in place by black, body-hugging elastic material. But then, As we twirled around the floor, I sensed less support and more draught. Stitch by unrelenting stitch, the seam unravelled until I felt everything else unravel with it. It wouldn't have been so bad, but to keep my partner sweet and avoid a panty line farrago, I had gone commando. It was an odd sensation, being utterly helpless as everything down below slowly gave way to gravity in front of an international television audience of millions. Most of the brass section gave way to laughter first. It's always the brass section. Then it was the turn of the strings. The drummer chose to give a roll instead of a beat, while one of the trumpets played the stripper. There was pandemonium. Although the man on the spotlight seized the opportunity to exercise his pinpoint marksmanship for a while, the lights were eventually dimmed to protect any shred of modesty that I had left. Chartreuse, who seemed to be the only one in the ballroom other than me without a sense of humour on this occasion, ran from the floor in floods of tears. I've never seen her since. I heard that she had given up dancing and has gone back to driving a bus. I, on the other hand, have started up an all-male dance troupe called Spandex Ballet. We have lots of engagements through my viral infamy, although wearing slim-fit underpants is now part of my costume, to avoid another unwanted appearance.
We're coming to the end of this week's programme. Thanks, as ever, to all our contributors, including our readers, Jilly, Caroline, Martin and Rich. And as ever, thank you for listening. Steve will be here next week with the next edition of the News Extra programme, but that's all from me, Bill Redway, in December 2019. We close with We Sing to You by Sergei Rachmaninoff, performed by the Resurrection Vocal Ensemble. I hope you enjoy it.